Welcome to meeting number 5 of a 5-day online intensive with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California on June 28, 2013.
Hi, this is John. Glad to be here. Glad to see you guys here. I have something I wanted to say real briefly about the microphone crisis yesterday. Something to keep in mind, and this is just common sense. Every venue whatsoever has its limitations and its features. Every venue. If we are, for example, if we are meeting together by means of occasional postings in the forum, that particular venue in which we can have conversation has no possibility of simultaneous communication whatsoever. If we're meeting in meeting by phone, we have a normal kind of phone conversation going on, but a lot of the other stuff that comes with being able to have a group of people together is not available to us then. If we're meeting in person, that's, to me, the very best of all, and that's when the most natural human types of conversation can unfold between me and whoever I'm speaking with me at the time. That's what I prefer best of all. But in these webinars, this is not an in-person meeting, and it's not a one-on-one phone call, and it's not like a meeting in a hall where everything can be pretty much unregulated. Meetings and webinar software have particular difficulties and issues that have to be addressed, and they are not as good. It's not as good an experience as actual conversation in which there's real-time give and take. But that's the price we pay for being able to meet together like this in a context where we can meet with people all over the world. That's the context that's the venue we use for worldwide online meetings, for the open houses, and for a number of other things. So just keep in mind that the technology here is not of the type that encourages that kind of roundtable conversations and so forth. We have other alternatives that we can use when we are meeting with a group of people for work-related issues and so forth and so on. But here, we just have the limitations that the technology itself imposes upon us. And, you know, not... things aren't always as we like them to be, anywhere, in any circumstance. So be patient, and try to make the best of the actually fantastic opportunity that's available to us because of the ability to use the internet to connect simultaneously with people in widely separated locations. I have very little to say this morning other than that. I wanted to just say that these 5-day online intensives, from my point of view, from our point of view, they serve two purposes basically. One purpose is to, and this is extremely important to us, one purpose is for us to be able to report to the community on the current state of our understanding and the current state of our work, to report to the community in a context which permits discussion about these matters. Not, you know, perfect, but discussion. And secondly, to hear from you whatever you'd like to bring to our attention and provide what help we can with any confusion or problems you might be experiencing. But hearing from you about matters that you would like to bring to our attention has two parts to it. One is to provide whatever help we can, and that's important, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity to do so to whatever extent I'm skillful enough to be helpful. But the other part of hearing from you is hearing from you about what's happening with you and what you see about the course we have taken and what you and any ideas you might have for improving the work we're doing and even for improving the way in which we communicate the practice itself and provide help to people. So when we meet together like this, we're meeting together presumably with a small group of people, all of whom have sufficient experience with the work we are doing to want to participate in such a extended meeting with us. And be able for all of us on all sides of this to bring clarity and simplicity and practical intelligence to what we're trying to do here. What we're trying to do is to bring this simple idea of looking at yourself to the entire world of human beings. We're not trying to persuade people that this is the answer to their problems, although in some sense that could be said to be the case. We're not trying to persuade people that this is something special or magical or has been transmitted to us from heavenly sources or anything like that. After all these years, we have come to the point, this is the most important thing to understand about the turn that our work is taking now. After all these years, we have finally come to the point in our work where we have a clear enough understanding of what it is that's possible in connection with this act of inward looking. And we have confidence and clarity in the fact that although there are many things about this, many implications that arise from this, and many things that we have no idea what's going on, that what we do know, and all those things are things that people will naturally take to in minds that are sane and not insane. The investigation into the metaphysical nature of things, if there is such a thing, the investigation into the true reality of what happens with the looking and what all of that stuff. That all will take place in due time among people who have driven themselves sane. We are satisfied with the fact and confident of the fact that although that whole range of understanding, it probably will never be complete. But that whole range of understanding is certainly not complete. What we do know, and we know this not because of some analysis of the usefulness or effectiveness of the looking, we know this because of the consistent and more numerous reports that come to us from people all over the world, some who have been in meetings like this with us, some who we have never heard of, some who have heard of us from other people and come to report the results of the looking to be exactly the same as those who have been with us for a while and have been working together with us. That sounds like a kind of a disjointed sentence, but I hope that makes sense to you. We're hearing from people who have not had direct contact with us with reports that are entirely consistent with the reports of people who have had direct contact with us. And the reports are very similar. I mean, they are idiosyncratic because the experience of this, the unfolding of life in everyone is particular and individualized to that person, that life, that mind. But they all follow us similar and confirming line of reports of what has happened to them in the period when they were trying to look, in the period following looking, and as things began to clear up for them in the end of things. These reports and the conversations that I have with people, we have with people all over the world, these reports and those conversations, you know, we now have people. There's a guy in South Africa who is on his own working to bring the looking to the people that he has access to and sending reports back to us of what people have found to be the case in their own in their own lives, in their own minds, as the effects of the looking unfold. And these reports are always the same. They are consistent. And they always end up, after periods of confusion and so forth and so on, they always end up in the same place, with the person grateful and happy. Well, I don't know, happy. Happy is a funny word. Satisfied, engaged with their lives. Not apart from their lives, not protected from their lives, but directly immersed and engaged in the unfolding of their own lives. And what this means to us, what this does for us, is make it very plain and indisputable that no matter how much we can become better, and God knows we are very much interested in becoming better, but no matter how much we can become better, and no matter how, at what level our understanding and our practice of what we're trying to do, bringing this to world is, that it works. You know? That is the most significant and salient factor about anything pertaining to this, is that evidence from all over the world is coming in, that in which people independently report the same course of what happens after they do the looking. And that means to us that this works. All the stuff we don't know is stuff we don't know. But what we do know is that if someone will take the effort, no matter what they think of it, I mean, really, this is important to see. No matter what they think of it, whether they think it makes sense or doesn't make sense, whether they think that it is, whatever they think it is, whether they think it's true or false, makes sense or doesn't make sense, whether they think it will work or they think it won't work, if they try to look, the outcome is always the same. It doesn't always follow exactly the same course because of the individual nature of human minds. And it doesn't exactly, the period of regeneration of the psychology, the regeneration of the mind, really, is not always the same length. Sometimes it happens very quickly. Sometimes it takes years. But it works. So that fact is the bright, shining reality that is in our eyes all the time now. That fact, the fact that it takes almost nothing to get people to do this, it is so obviously harmless, it is so lacking in any requirement to believe anything or disbelieve anything, so lacking in any requirement to understand anything or stop an understanding of something, that people are, and it's so easy and it's so simple and it is kind of attractive, that people, when they hear of it, are willing to try whatever they think of it. And when they try, if you try to do this, you cannot fail. You can think you've failed, but you cannot fail. And that is the other thing that is coming to light as more, the experience of more and more people come to us in reports and so forth. So we don't need to further polish our understanding of how to do the looking and what happens after the looking and so forth and so on, in order to accomplish our main purpose in this work, which is to bring this opportunity, this possibility, to the entire human community. We don't need further clarification and polishing and so forth of the idea of the looking and the fear of life and all of that, in order to accomplish our main purpose, which is to get this out into the world before it is, quite frankly, too late to do any good. Now, that doesn't mean that the process of clarification and concentration of the understanding of the looking and the understanding of the role of the fear of life and the understanding of the way in which the psychology is regenerated is a result of this act of looking. That work is also deeply interesting and important to us, but we don't need to complete that in order to bring this to the people who so desperately need it in the world at large. So in meetings like this, as I said, the two things is, one, to report to you, to the community through you, the current state of our understanding and the current state of our understanding of our work and what is to be done and so forth and so on. The second is to hear from you whatever you would like to bring to our attention, so that these meetings in which we have 5 days to consider these things, 5 days in which to communicate the current state of things in this work, and 5 days to have discourse with one another about the work, about the looking, about the bringing it to the world, about whatever issues and problems may be arising in your life as well, because issues and problems that arise in your life arise in everybody's lives. If they arise in the context of the looking, they arise in everybody's lives who has taken on the looking. So these are the places where we can, first of all, bring you up to date on what's happening, and secondly, work together on, I'm not so much interested in polishing the understanding, but work together on developing and deepening our understanding of the consequences of this work and the possibilities of this work and the means and understandings that we can bring to bear to the distress that sometimes follows the first attempt to do this work. So that's all I have to say. I said I wasn't going to say anything, but I said more than I thought. But that's all I have to say, but I really would like to hear from you folks today and see what you make of all of this. See what you make of this week together. See what you make of this whole enterprise of trying to bring this simple thing to the entire community of human beings. Because we really, really desperately need something. Okay? So I'm done. It's your turn. Raise your hand and so forth if you want to talk. I'm happy to be here with you. Okay, I have a question here from, or a comment here from Tej. I'm going to read it and then I'll have something to say about it. Okay. Tej says, "Hi, John. I think one of the biggest hurdles in getting this message out there to the general populace is that the message seems too simple, almost to the point of being absurd. Most of the folks who have any inclination to solve their life issues turn to religion or spiritual groups. Also, people expect complicated rituals, messages, practices, etc. It is challenging to make folks understand this." This is my observation. Yeah, I see that, you know, we're very aware of that fact, okay? That the message seems very simple and that people are accustomed to complicated things in order to, no doubt, in order to match the complication of what they consider to be the problems. And of course, when all else in the physical world fails, people turn to religion and spirituality. That's natural and to be expected. But what we've found, Tej, is that, and this itself is really kind of hard to believe, but it's the kind of thing that it's either true or not, so believing in it is kind of beside the point. It's either true or not. And what we have found to be true is that if we present the act itself without wrapping it in a whole bunch of problems that it is to cure that are particular to the individual, like I think the Avaaz petition is an example of that, if we can present the act itself in a way that does not contend against people's existing ideas of what works and what doesn't work, which doesn't require them to see this as the answer to their to the entire problems of their life, if we just present it simply and cleanly enough, with enough of explanation to, you know, to be understood anyway, that people try it. When people hear it, they try it. And I think the reason for that is because it's attractive and because it's not threatening, because it's obviously harmless, and it certainly has some bearing that it is absolutely, entirely free of any charge or conditions whatsoever. So, given the fact that we now see that doing the act can be reliably depended upon to bring about the effect that we're trying to accomplish here, and given the fact that the act itself is really easy to suggest to people and agree with them, yeah, it sounds silly, it doesn't sound like it does anything, but it can't hurt anything, and, you know, why not? That it doesn't take a great deal of belief, it doesn't take any belief in the act, and it doesn't take any convincing that the act is going to solve all of the day-to-day problems, you know, the challenges that people face in their life. So, and that's not theory. I mean, that we have seen to be the case. And we've seen it to be the case because there are people who have heard of this act in the simplest possible way. For example, the ACTS app. They hear of the act in the simplest possible way, and whatever they think of it, they try it, and then they come back eventually and tell us what happened. And the course is always the same. I mean, it is idiosyncratic, the details of the results of it, the details of it, but the overall course of it is always the same. So what we've come to conclude is that wasting a lot of time trying to persuade people of the efficacy and the usefulness of this act is just a waste of time. Waiting until there is, like, paying attention to the resistances and defenses that automatically arise to the act is not useful at all. It's the act that's useful. And the act does not need to be, it can be understood, it does not need to be understood. It doesn't even need for the person to know, and I'm an example of that. It doesn't even need for the person to know that this act is intended to bring about the effects it's intended to bring about. And I'm, as I say, I am totally part of that. So, Ted says, before describing the act, we need to lead into it. What's a good way to say that this is a solution to the fear of life? The lead into it, and that's something you could talk about that, because if you talk about the fear of life in a manner, Tej just said, before describing the act, we need to lead into it. What's a good way to say that is that this is a solution for the fear of life? And yeah, the fear of life is such that it can be talked about in non-spiritual, ordinary, practical human understanding of what happens to human beings when they get born. So you can talk about the fear of life, but I don't think it's necessary to persuade them of that. And I think that it really doesn't matter what you say about it to get them to do it. The important thing is to get them to do it. And not to lie to them, of course. I wouldn't, I don't lie to anybody if I know that, intentionally. And here's the thing, Tej, that there's two parts to this approach. There's two parts to what you're asking. One part is, what do you or I as individuals, when coming upon somebody that I want to communicate the act to, you know, without the trappings of me sitting in a chair and being videotaped and all that stuff, just on the street. One part is that. How do we go about talking to people in a way that will minimize their resistance to it so that they will do it and have at least something to hang their hat on? And that, I think, is entirely as it naturally comes from you, whoever it is that's bringing this. If you have an understanding yourself of what it is, and you have certainly a far better understanding of the people you're speaking to than I could, then your natural presentation of it in your own words, just as you would say it to anybody, is the best way to proceed. And I mean that for everybody. The best way to proceed is not with a fixed idea. You know, you have things in your mind that might be useful to say, like the fear of life and so forth and so on, but not to have a fixed idea of what to say, but to say, when the opportunity arises, it arises spontaneously, and your response can be as spontaneous as it's arising. As the thing you're trying to get them to do is to try to get the taste of what they feel like. And however you go about doing that or justifying it, that's the most effective way you'll be able to do so, really. The other part of that, and to understand what we're doing, it's important to understand that there are these two parts of it. The part of individual, person-on-person, passing of this possibility to people, family and friends and acquaintances and so forth. And it turns out that word of mouth, our goal is to get this to the whole world, right? So that everything that we talk about, when I'm talking about it, I'm talking about it from the standpoint of my goal is to bring it to the world. So that method, the word of mouth method, is the one that is most certain to produce the act itself in the person you're talking to. It's more certain than any other way that we can possibly come up with. You speaking word of mouth to people you know is the way that has been demonstrated, and we're talking about any kind of message that people are trying to get out to the world. And that's been demonstrated that word of mouth is the most effective in actually getting the people who hear it to actually try the act. Almost everybody you speak to, if you ask them to do it, they'll do it. And that's true for everybody, where you're speaking either one-on-one or, you know, people together in physically. All right? That's word of mouth. And that's the most effective for actually causing the act to be performed. But there's another realm here that needs to be addressed, because word of mouth isn't really going to get us very far very quickly. And what we have seen throughout history is the resilience of the insanity over time, that we have gone through crisis after crisis throughout history, through massacres, through slaughters, wars, and all kinds of things. And when everything shakes down and gets back to a relatively undisturbed state, everybody goes back to the same thing they were doing before. So it's important to us to get this out as quickly as possible, because now, in our time, and I don't want to sound like some nutcase crying the end of the world, or some Old Testament prophet out there in the street saying, repent, repent, the end is near. But the actual practical fact of the matter is that we have acquired for ourselves as a species, as a community, we have acquired for ourselves the capacity really to put an end to ourselves on this planet. There's really a chance of that happening. In fact, it seems almost certain if the behavior and psychology of the human species as a whole doesn't change radically in ways that has never happened in the past. So we see a certain urgency in getting this message out to the world. Not an urgency that is crying, oh, the world is about to end, and sell, and give me your possessions and go to the hills. But in a adult and sane and sensible assessment of the situation. And there's certainly plenty of material to support that view. So that means that word of mouth, although it is the most effective in having it done, and it is the most useful thing that can be done as individual persons ourselves, and should continue, and I would advise you to, when you speak to people and try to present them with the act, that you rely on your own experience of having done it yourself, and your own experience of the outcome of that doing. And that's extremely important. That transmission is the one that sticks and takes hold. But also, given the situation in the world, and given the incredible, almost magical technology that is available to us that allows us to reach out to the world, we are focusing a lot of our attention on the second part of that, which is the mass media, which is getting news of it out into the world. And the goal of it is, obviously the goal of it is to get a sufficient mass of people who have done the act where there's a chance of it spreading rapidly throughout the entire human community. And the first step in that is just getting people to hear about it. I mean, if people hear about it, that's a big step in the right direction. But we are looking now at the technology available to us to get this out into the world. And that technology doesn't require deep and nuanced understanding of the work at all. It requires only bringing the suggestion to people in a form that we can be confident that if they pay attention to what we're suggesting, that they will try to do it themselves. And that's not nearly as effective as causing that to happen as talking to people by word of mouth. But where the importance of that work comes into play is in the fact that that spreads word of it more quickly than anything else. So we are adjusting our presentation. The Avaaz petition is of a different nature than anything we've done before. And we're watching to see, and by the way, there's really quite a, I think we're, right now we're at, I don't know, 250 or something like that, but there's been like 1,600 views of it. There's more and more people who have heard of it, and the Avaaz petition actually seems to be, and that's just 3 days since we posted it, the Avaaz petition actually seems to be working pretty well in trying to get news of it out into the world. We are going to start, as soon as there's time, we're going to start using AdWords. We have a, because we're a nonprofit foundation, Google gives us AdWords for free, which is a huge value. We're going to start using AdWords. We're going to start using, we have to find phrases that are short enough to be allowed and to the point enough to cause people to just look at it. And when they go, then they go to a place that describes the act of looking. And this is all like the first stages of this move into trying to bring this kind of by mass media. This is our first attempts at it, and we see that we need to learn as we go along. We need to analyze what we do and see what the results are and change what we're doing in order to make them work better. We need to communicate with the community. We really need for the community to be engaged with this effort to bring this to the world at large. We really need the help and the support and the evaluation of the work we're doing. And that's what we are trying to, what we want to do is we want to move that effort into the grassroots room at HICCHAT and start more and more involving people in that way and being helpful in making this thing get out to the world. But for you, out there in the world, an individual person surrounded by people who need this, really. We all need this. You out there in the world, surrounded by people who need this, and filled with the interest and desire to make it available to them. Again, use your own experience. Spontaneously. Don't worry about the exquisite truth or falsehood of what you're saying. Don't worry about any of that. Just speak as you would normally to people if you were suggesting to them that they should, stop eating meat or whatever. This is not something that requires the communication of an advanced, philosophically complete exposition of what this is about. It is people who trust you, hearing from you in a way that's understandable, that this is something worthwhile to try. You don't have to make great claims for it. It's just something worthwhile to try. It's free, and it's harmless. Like one of the things on the Avaaz petition, what we call the Avaaz petition, was this: just one look could change everything. And those kind of phrases, those kind of catchphrases, are the things that we can use to get this out into the world. The other thing is, when you're talking to people on your own, don't even worry, don't try to force them into anything. If they express disinterest or they don't want to hear it, let's just let them be. They will have heard it already. Don't put too much stock in the immediate reactions that you get from people. The immediate reactions are almost always predicated on the assumption that life is dangerous and that you have to be really careful. And they actually have no effect whatsoever on the effectiveness of the looking if you suggest it to them and they do it, which they probably will. Is that helpful at all, Tej? Okay, thank you, Tej. And I know, by the way, that I do go on. This is part of this meeting together, is to be revealing of what is actually happening here, rather than establishing some kind of a front of everything is as perfect as it can be, and I am enlightened, and therefore everything I say is just exactly as it should be said, and so forth and so on. We don't have that advantage here. And I know that I do go on. That's a fact. And I often get some humor and some not humor from the recognition of that from time to time. I'm trying to get better. Obviously, I'm not there since I'm still going on and on now. But I'm trying to get better. And I will be more and more doing talks that I have given previous thought to, and in some cases even written out, so that I can be a little less irritating with my endless talking. Okay? I was just rereading Tej's message, and I'm going to go on just a little bit more about that. I want to be really clear that in order to pass on this, the possibility, the suggestion to do the act of looking, you don't have to contend with any of their beliefs, any of people's beliefs, practices, spiritual aspirations, religious aspirations. This has nothing to do with any of that. And it's really important to see that and not to get drawn into an approach that relies on invalidating what they're already doing. There's nothing people are doing that need to be invalidated. We invalidate things that people do all the time, and that's just continuing the war by another name. What we're trying to do is simply give people something that does not require them to give up anything, really. It just requires them to do one simple thing. Okay? I just wanted to make that clear. Okay, well, it appears that that there are no questions or comments that you feel the need to bring to our attention now. That's okay. It's what we're doing is pretty simple, and there's really not a lot to not allowed to talk about it. Maybe that's why I go on and on. So unless you disagree with me, unless you have something that you think ought to be looked at, or you think we should wait for another 15 minutes, unless you disagree with me and say so, we're just going to end this meeting now and go back to our work. Anybody have a problem with that? Okay, then. Thank you. This has been an extremely rich intensive for us. We have seen a lot and learned a lot from you. I hope that you will see the results of this in our own presentation and our own work as time goes on. It's not necessary, and I want to say, it's not necessary for us to be in a meeting like this for you to bring to us whatever you want to say to us about this work, about how we could do it better, about how you're doing it and what's working for you, what you think of our approach here, what you think of our overall general the project that we have launched to bring this to the world. You can let us know. You can write to us. You can go to the forums. I really advise anybody who is relatively new to what we're doing, I would really advise that you spend some time, especially in the Looking forum, at Just One Look, and keeping in mind that the forums are a medium that is strange, and it's hard to follow a conversation. There are threads, and you can follow that thread, but it's hard to follow a conversation, and it's hard to get an overall sense of what's going on unless you just start reading the posts without attending to any judgment that comes up about the post, or expectation of what's going to come next, or anything at all except the post that you happen to be reading then. And I'll tell you, like, I read every post. There's nothing gets posted on that forum that I don't read. And reading those posts over these years has been one of the greatest sources of education to me. But you have to do it, you know, if you're not familiar with the structure and the way forums work, you have to be willing to go there and just start reading the posts. And after a while, you'll see that one might refer to something else, and you'll learn to make your way around in there, and who knows, you might even end up posting yourself and being helpful to people from your own point of view. But But kind of immersing yourself into what's happening in those forums, and they're not like what you've seen elsewhere. Immersing yourself in that, paying attention to it, without feeling the need to agree or disagree with anything. If you do that, and you do that over a period of time, your understanding of what's happening here will grow immensely. I really cannot overstate the usefulness of spending time in the forums. And if you haven't signed the Avaaz petition, sign the Avaaz petition. It's a petition, you know, I already told you, it's a petition to each human being. And the signers of the petition are bringing to every human being who reads it the suggestion and request that they try the act of looking. That's what the petition is. And it is a way of getting knowledge of the existence of what we're doing widespread in the world, because it's very popular. Same thing with Facebook. Same thing with Twitter. Same thing with Pinterest. Same thing with Reddit. Same thing with all of them. If you are of a mind that is that understands what all those things are and want to be helpful, use those to get the word out. Look at the information that we're putting out and see to what extent you can use part of that yourself to bring that. Direct people to Avaaz, direct people to the website, direct people to where they can find help. And again, Facebook, all those, all the social things. So we're going to go now. We're going to go back to work. Sign up for the newsletters, and we have actually three newsletters. We broke them into three because trying to put all the information that that we sent to people into one newsletter was just too big a thing. It was too much to expect people to go all the way down to the bottom to find when the next online meeting was or things like that. So we broke them up. There is a news edition, and the news edition is news, basically. It brings news of what's happening, what we're up to, you know, and what's new on the websites and so forth. There is a web edition, which brings news of postings in the podcasts and blogs and other things that happen on the web. And there is a events edition in which we list the current events that are coming up, and nothing more than that, where it's just a plain list of the events that are coming up in this month or for the, you know, until the next newsletter, so that it's easy to to find out what's going on and choose what you want to go to if you want to go to one. So sign up for all three if you can. There's not a whole mass of emails that you're going to receive from us. You'll receive three a month, and they're spread out over the month. So it's great to be here with you. Thank you so much for the time you spent with us. I think we're done here. I love you all. I am honored and grateful for your willingness to spend time with me. See you the next time. Bye.
You just listened to meeting number 5 of a 5-day online intensive with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California on June 28, 2013. For more live recordings, visit our podcast at www.justoneloop.org.